Grüezi miteinander, ganz herzlich willkommen und einen wunderschönen guten Tag, meine sehr verehrten Damen und Herren, liebe Freunde aus nah und fern, von wo aus auch immer Sie uns zuschauen mögen. Ich begrüße Sie zu dieser Sondersendung von Weltwoche Daily, die andere Sicht, unabhängig, kritisch, gut gelaunt, aufgezeichnet am Donnerstag, dem 7. November 2024, an einem sehr wichtigen und interessanten Tag hier an der Waldeikonferenz in den Hochplateaus des Kaukasus, einer Art Schweiz am Schwarzen Meer. Die Berge sind verschneit, ein Skigebiet, die Gondeln fahren noch nicht, aber es herrscht reger Betrieb und heute wird ein ganz berühmter Gast erwartet. Ich weiß gar nicht, ob ich das sagen darf. Der russische Präsident Wladimir Putin himself wird sich hier die Ehre geben und mit den Waldeikonferenzteilnehmern in einer Chatham House Rules Situation sprechen. Man wird fragen stellen können und es interessiert natürlich alle, wie er die Weltlage, diese verfahrene Situation anschaut. Und der Gast, den wir heute in der Sendung haben, ist auch ein ganz berühmter Mann. Er ist seit Jahrzehnten vielleicht eine der führenden außenpolitischen Stimmen Russlands. Ich habe ihn in meiner neuesten Ausgabe als den Henry Kissinger von Russland bezeichnet. Er ist ehemaliger Unternehmer. Er ist Hochschulgelehrter, er ist Publizist, er hat dieses Waldei-Forum ins Leben gerufen vor 20 Jahren und wir haben auch schon ein Interview mit ihm machen dürfen vor den Sommerferien in seinem Office in Moskau. Ich möchte ganz herzlich begrüßen Professor Sergei Karaganov, eine der mächtigen und auch einflussreichen Stimmen hier im außenpolitischen Establishment von Russland. Und jetzt werde ich auf Englisch wechseln, weil mein Russisch einfach noch nicht ganz konkurrenzfähig ist und wir uns auf Englisch gut verständigen können. Professor Karaganov, welcome again to our show. It's great to have you. Yeah, it's an interesting conference. But let's start with the event of yesterday, the American election. Donald Trump again in the White House. Is this good news or bad news for Russia?
For the time being, it is neither good news nor bad news, because Donald Trump will continue with the current policy with some nuances. He has his hands tied by his establishment. However, it is long term. It is good news for the world, because probably more sensible people will come to power. In the medium term, if United States does not change its course, it is also not very good news for Russia, because America will be strong again and it will be even a stronger competitor. However, it will be, I would say, a more manageable competitor and a bit more predictable after, of course, the first 2 years, because we know who Mr. Trump is. But he probably will adjust and bring in a stronger team.
There is an interesting remark he made during his campaign. He said, Russia and China are not enemies of the United States. They are potential partners. What do you make of such statements? What weight do they have? Is this just rhetoric, or do you believe that he's a well-meaning man who really wants to embark on constructive relations to Russia?
In principle, of course, he would like to woo Russia away from China. We know that very well. And during his first term, his emissaries come to Russia trying to persuade us to part with China. We said, no, thank you. It is much better to have a good friend very close rather than an unreliable somebody over the ocean. So the same will be the answer today. But we are, of course, open for better relations, because they are extremely hostile on the American side and they're dangerous for the whole world. And, of course, we shall be persuading our American now enemies, hopefully again partners, to continue with the withdrawal from the role of the global hegemon. It is not good for the world. It is very bad for the United States. So when they withdraw to a position of a normal great power, it will be good for Americans. It will be good for the world. So we shall try to persuade him, but also to push him in that right direction.
give him some guidelines. You're saying the United States are a hegemon in the West, in Europe, in the United States. People, of course, talk about Russia. They say Russia and President Putin, they are imperialists. This is an imperial power. It's not the hegemonical power, but it's an imperial power, a land-hungry empire who is attacking other countries in order to grow bigger, larger, and ever greater. What do you say to that? Is Russia an imperial power? Is Putin the imperial president of the news you see in the West?
We do not need new lands. What we need in Ukraine is a security buffer, and we have been persuading our Western previously partners not to go further certain lines for 25 years. I did it for 26 years, actually, but to no avail. That's why the whole thing started. As to whether Russia is an imperial power, we are proud to be an imperial power. We are the best empire in the world because when we expanded, we did not suppress the people, but integrated with them and integrated them. That's why we become so multicultural, so culturally and religiously open, and so I see nothing wrong with the Russian Empire, but we do not pretend to other lands. Thank you. I mean, we have enough. My main project now, apart from all others, is development of Siberia. I mean, Siberia is, in terms of worth, probably is 10 Europes. Mm-hmm. So why on earth should we go there?
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. I mean, the rhetoric goes in this direction. If you listen to the European Union, they say, if we do not stop Russia now in Ukraine, we cannot trust this country. They will attack the Baltic states, and probably they will end up at the Brandenburg Gate.
Well, if our European partner, enemies now, continue to act suicidal, they will be defeated, I mean, all time. I mean, totally. Mm-hmm. But we do not want that. I mean, we need, I mean, a relatively peaceful Europe, a good and relatively affluent, though, of course, not that affluent as previously, partner and buyer of our goods. Mm-hmm. We do not need land. Mm-hmm. However, if NATO and the European Union continues with the support of anti-Russian politics, they will suffer.
Mm. And now there is a big discussion about peace in Ukraine. There is the people are tired of this war. I mean, also in Europe, you see it in the polls. Prime Minister Orban from Hungary said, we need to have a ceasefire. This is now the new keyword, ceasefire in Ukraine. What do you think? Is a ceasefire realistic? And what kind of ceasefire could that be? Is that a ceasefire in the sense of Korea? Is it a ceasefire in the sense of Cyprus? What do you make of all of this?
There could be a ceasefire after a complete capitulation of Ukraine and a complete disarmament of Ukraine. Then we shall negotiate as to whether NATO should retreat to, or at least its military machine, to the borders of 97. And hopefully we will find a solution to that. But Ukraine, there could be partial ceasefire, but a ceasefire now means simply, a postponement of the war, which will then restart, because we have to crush the will of Europeans who are simply mad and are running towards a third world war. Mm-hmm. They have unleashed two already, and they forgot about that. They are running into a third world war. We have to stop them, to crush their will of them to support or to fight Russia, because it's not already only support of Ukraine. Of course, they started this meat-grinding machine, killing hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers. Mm-hmm. Civilians die too. Mm-hmm. But we have to stop that one way or another, and total capitulation, of course. Mm-hmm. Sooner or later, the question is how, when, and with which means we shall achieve that goal. That could be stops and pauses, but not less than that.
You are famous for your provocative way of thinking. Your statements have been widely and also internationally recognized. Is this your personal opinion, or is this something that you discuss privately with President Putin? Is that also the opinion of the leadership of your country?
I will never say what I... I did not talk to President Putin. It's as simple as that. But that is my personal position, which is shared by most people in the leadership of the country. Mm-hmm. As far as I know. However, of course, they could have different positions. And of course, I mean, officials are saying, yes, we are going for negotiations. I think we should go for negotiations. But it will be negotiations eventually about total capitulation mm-hmm. of Ukraine, but also the retreat of NATO and European Union to where it belongs. Mm-hmm. I do not want to say to the dustbin of history.
Mm-hmm. How close is that point? How long do we have to see this war raging on till we reach a point where you would say, from the Russian perspective, there could be a ceasefire, there could be substantial negotiations? Are we close to that point, or is it a question of years?
We are closing to that point. It depends, many things depends on, of course, on what the United States will think about it, because the United States are obviously losing interest in continuation of what, because they have ripped all the profits. They have bleeded Russia white a little bit, but also for they provoked Russia into fantastic growth while bleeding it white in terms of human, in terms of men. Then they started to rob Europe, I mean, full scale. So they have already achieved many of their goals. And when and if they see that the war could go nuclear, and they are already being aware of that, they withdraw. Mm-hmm. And they are starting to rethink already. Mm-hmm. So they will sooner or later withdraw. The better, the sooner the better it is for Ukrainians, for Russians, and for Europeans, because if this war continues, it will inevitably suck in more European countries.
What is, if we open up the perspective now a little bit from the Ukraine war, we look a bit at the global landscape, what, Professor Karaganov, is at the moment the greatest problem of the world?
The greatest problem of the world is the slide of the world to the Third World War. And it's not only because of the vicious counterattack of the West and the decline of the many elites, but simply because the tectonic plates under the world system have moved away. There are many reasons. One of them was that the West has been devoid of its military preponderance, on which it had based its domination in five centuries domination in world affairs, which permitted it to rob the outside world and to impose culture, politics, etc. But also we Russia, we're happy we have freed the world from quote unquote Western yoke. I don't want to be too hostile, but I mean the world is growing now. I mean, it's unbelievable. The suppressed civilizations are growing in front of our eyes. New centers of powers are growing. But that inevitably will increase tensions between them. And we see already these tensions, I mean, flashing in the Far East, in South, in Southeast, in South Asia, in the Middle East, etc., etc., etc. The question is to stop this slide towards World War III. And there are two ways. One is to defeat NATO and Europe, so they would retreat to a proper position in the world. But second, to reintroduce the nuclear fuse into international system, because nuclear deterrence stopped to work. Mm-hmm. And third is building a parallel set of institutions for the new world. not doing away with the current ones, because to the extent they are useful, like UN and even maybe International Monetary Fund, etc., the World Trade Organization, but they are declining. We have to build a parallel set of organizations and compete with these. So build the foundation for the future world order, which will be more fair, more peaceful, and more cultural and political diverse. I love that world.
What's the role of the Chinese in this new world? The Chinese, if you listen also to some remarks here at the conference, they are totally not in favor of a third world war. Also the Indians, they say we have to have peaceful relationship to the West, to the United States. I would say one of the basic messages of this Valdai conference is, well, there are issues, conflicts between, for example, Russia or the Eurasian sphere and the United States. But there, I didn't feel any kind of belligerence on the side of the Chinese, of the Indians. Even you, I mean, you're talking about finding ways to have a peaceful understanding again. What's the role of China in this whole dangerous situation?
First of all, China is a Russian-Chinese axis, is the foundation of the world peace now. I mean, and international stability. We are being joined by India, and this triangle will be the foundation for the time being, hopefully. But we are working on that. Second, China will never become a hegemon, even when it, 10 years or so, which will become their world power number one. And of course, it will overtake the United States in terms of comprehensive power. But they are will be unable to and unwilling to impose their ways, their cultural, political, etc. Also because Chinese culture is is hard to export. We could have spoken all Chinese if in the 14th century one of the emperors wouldn't have done away with their fleet, which was probably, I think, if I remember, 50 times bigger than the combined fleet of European powers. But they decided to do without that. So now, for at least 100 years, China is not hegemon, and they're not winning. However, and we are building also the system of Eurasian security order, which will be based on the new balance between, so China, Chinese power will be balanced by several great powers surrounding it. Russia, Turkey, Iran, India, Arabs. So China will be unable and probably unwilling to dominate, but it is a hard choice for them, because they are not used to be a global power. Throughout the history, they have been a regional power. But whether they are aware of what they will be, or whether they will go, depends on us. And we are talking with the Chinese behind the scenes very closely about how we believe they should develop. But of course, we're not imposing our views. It's a very, very friendly dialogue. Mm-hmm. In principle, there will be greater Eurasia. Mm-hmm. Parts of Europe hopefully return to the greater Eurasia, because greater Eurasia parts maybe will leave Europe to become a subsidiary of the United States, which will retreat over the ocean. Mm. But hopefully we will find a new peaceful order. And, of course, when we win this war and when the new balance is found, and the sooner the better, we are open, of course, of having good relations with Europeans and with Americans. Mm. Because one-sided friendship with China is very profitable. But long-term, it is not too beneficial. Mm-hmm.
Viktor Orban said at our Weltwoche podium meeting with Chancellor Schröder in Vienna, he said, there is a leadership crisis in the West, and at the moment we see the birth of a new leadership. New parties get to power. Nobody expected Donald Trump to come back to power. There are a lot of changes in the West. Don't you think that these changes will really bring about a new dynamic into the whole situation in the relationships between Russia, Europe, a positive change?
Hopefully, but the question is, and that is our calculation too, that national forces or national-oriented forces, patriotic forces, will come back to the capitals of European powers and the United States rather than this liberal, globalist, imperialist elite which are anti-European and anti-American, quote-unquote, because they do not connect their interests with the interests of great powers. They dreamed and still dream of global government, of the reign of NGOs which they buy, and of transnational corporations. Mm-hmm. It is a dream worse than communism. Mm-hmm. I've been living in the Communist Party. Mm-hmm. They're absolutely repeating the mistakes of the communist dream of Communist International. Yeah. It is so funny. They look like a caricature to Lenin and Marx.
Yeah. a question that strikes me when I discuss with Russian intellectual, with academics like you, with people I know, friends, I see one danger for Russia. I fully understand, of course, the position that you have. You say, what happened in Ukraine, we have pushed back by the West, we talked to them, we couldn't convince them. It is a sense of hopelessness in this communication. But I see a danger, and I would like to know what you think about it. Isn't the danger that you could cultivate in Russia some kind of mental Weimar Republic syndrome, a kind of a resentment that you think these bastards in the West, they have treated us so badly. We freed them from Napoleon and Hitler. We suffered millions of dead people. And what's our reward? They we get pushed around. They look at us like idiots. And then a country, a people can also fall in the other extreme and cultivate a revenge feeling, a resentment. How big is that danger in Russia that you're becoming, that you're repeating, not the mistakes that we are repeating with communism, but probably that you could start to repeat mistakes from the Weimar experience in Germany, if you allow that question, Professor Karaganov?
Absolutely. From the 90s, I myself and my colleagues were very much aware of the Weimar scenario, and we fought it very hard by different means, persuading Russia that everything was not that bad, though it was bad, trying to build up our relations with the West, trying to persuade the West not to go the Weimar way from the other side. Mm-hmm. But now, we have passed the Weimar point. We are winning. Already. I think that European Union is more in the Weimar position, mm-hmm. the Weimar German position, mm-hmm. than we are. But we would not want them to humiliate them as they were trying to humiliate us. We would like to United States and Europeans, not Brussels crowd, to retreat with flying banners, and then we have be friends again.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk for our final question here about your conference. You invented with colleagues this Valdai conference since 20 years. This is the 21st edition. It shows the importance that high-profile politicians, the big guys, are coming to this conference. Yesterday we had Foreign Minister Lavrov in a very candid conversation. Today President Putin is coming. We have discussed the situation of the American election. What do you think about this edition of your Valdai conference? Are you content? Are you think it's great, how it develops? What have you learned this year at your conference?
I was one of the masterminds and organizers and the first president of the Valdai Club. There were several aims which we were trying to achieve. One is to open up our elite to the world, because we, during the 90s, we have become too concentrated on ourselves. And people lost feeling of the outside world. Second, to build a relationship between intellectual elites of Russia and the outside world. Third, of course, it was to help our president to reach the international audiences. It is obvious, after all, Valdai is openly funded by the Russian government and some corporations too. Then, of course, the fourth was to create a new class of Russian intellectuals who are much more open, much more realistic. They are all my disciples. And so at first, these Valdai conferences from the beginning were extremely interesting, much more interesting than normal conferences, because they were very open. I insisted at that time on inviting opposition. Now it is very hard because, I mean, we are at war. Mm-hmm. But leading opposition figures were there, and we had fantastic discussions. But previously, the Valdai conferences were still mostly oriented towards the Western audiences and to the Western intellectuals. Gradually, they became a little bit duller. During the last 10 years, we have opened up to the global South or the world majority, and now we see. It is multicultural. I mean, it is brilliant. Different views, different. They enrich each other, us, much better than previously, and they're much more fascinating and much more fun. Mm-hmm. So, as a founder, I must say, an old man should say, "Well, you know, my young years, it was better. Now it is better." Mm-hmm. But hopefully, 3 or 4 or 5 years after we achieve the victory, we shall also be happy to invite Americans and Europeans too. Mm-hmm. Because now their conference, we have Europeans here, we have some Americans, but we have to open up a little bit and also to help our European and American colleagues to understand the world properly.
Mm-hmm. One very last question, which I forgot to ask before. Emmanuel Todt, the French historian, wrote an interesting book about the end of the West. I don't share his hypothesis. I'm not a doomsday guy, but he brings an interesting definition. He says, Russia is an authoritarian democracy, and many countries in the West are liberal oligarchies. What do you make of the term authoritarian democracy, or how would you describe this system you have in Russia, which is the cause of so many projections and also criticisms? How would you describe, as an expert of Russia, the nature of your government?
It is authoritarian state with strong democratic elements. I wouldn't say it's even a democracy, but it's authoritarian state. It is a state which is proper for Russia, both in terms of its history, in terms of its culture, and in terms of its global positions. Mm-hmm. We couldn't be democracy. We couldn't be monarchy anymore. Though I'm jokingly saying that I am all for monarchy in one case, if the monarch is me. And of course, we are ahead of history, because all countries are moving towards authoritarianism, Europeans too. Hopefully they will get to more authoritarian and sensible governments before they get fascist again, which they could. Mm-hmm. On this road towards the new world. But democracies are, and I say that openly, and I have been saying that for decades, that democracy is one way by which plutocracies and oligarchies reign complex societies. And they are relatively effective in normal times. Mm-hmm. But when the tensions are, democracies always die. And and yield to autocracies, monarchies, etc., etc. It is a rule of the law. I mean, as history, no exception but one. The United States of America, which was born as an oligarchic democracy. Mm-hmm. I think if they become an autocracy, they could simply die, and I don't want mm-hmm. the United States to die, because it's one of the foundations of the future world. Mm-hmm. And also, if they collapse, it will be terrible.
I have another example, which is an exception, Switzerland, but we don't talk about Switzerland. I have a really very last question. I don't want to take more of your time. What's the ultimate source of legitimacy in Russia? What has a leader to fulfill that he's not pushed out of power? I mean, in Switzerland, it is the system of our institution, how it is elected. Under in the United States, you have seen the guy who is elected after the campaign, and then in television they can say, what is in Russia the most important thing that a leader is considered to be legitimate?
Well, first of all, we're happy at the Swiss system of government, all the more that Alexander the First was the real father of modern Switzerland. So we're interested in seeing that your experience succeeds. However, there will be problems, okay, because you will be surrounded by states which will not be exactly very nice.
That was always the case throughout history. And I can tell you they were worse. 80 years ago it was worse.
Absolutely, but this time, I mean, you made a mistake. Hopefully you'll correct it, because you decided to do away for the time being, at least, with your neutrality, which was absolutely amazing. I didn't believe my eyes when you did that. But however, I think things will be corrected.
We threw it away also during the two world wars, but then suddenly the Swiss realized they had to bring neutrality back. So please don't let your hope go on Switzerland. Neutrality will return. But what about the legitimacy of Russia?
Legitimacy is a strong leader which the majority, a strong leadership, effective government, which the majority of people believe is serving the country. And serving the country means serving their family, community, the nation, and the God. And these are, and of course, the leader who fulfills the hope of most of the Russians, it's manifest destiny. We are the country which frees the world from all hegemons and oppressors.
It sounds almost American, what you're saying here.
No, I'm sorry, but I mean, Americans have a two-shot history. We have defeated Napoleon, we have defeated Karl XII, who wanted to take over. We have defeated Napoleon, we have defeated Hitler. Now we shall defeat Brussels, hopefully without war, without big war.
Well, I could tell Brussels is not as strong as Napoleon.
Sure, absolutely. But remember that even Napoleon, a brilliant man, made a few mistakes. And Hitler, with all his general stuff, which was full of very intelligent people, also made terrible mistakes. European Brussels have been doing one mistake after another. Before, Americans did a few mistakes just in the last couple of decades. After reaching certain level of total hegemony, they started to cut their feet by going into one adventure and losing into another. I mean, Afghanistan, Iraq, then Libya. I remember talking to top American leaders on behalf of my friends in the Russian government, persuading them not to go to Afghanistan and to Iraq. But they went. And then, of course, before that, they rejected the Russian desire to join the West, which was absolutely amazing. I mean, I didn't believe my eyes. I thought that this rejection means that they wanted to deliver a coup de grace. And after they cleaned the way for the great Chinese civilization to prosper, I mean, that was, I mean, beyond my, I mean, I didn't believe my eyes, but at that time I already understood that they're simply stupid.
Where is the beam of hope? Where is the silver lining? Your final remark in this interview, where is the the silver lining. We have talked about gloomy issues here, Third World War. What would you say, Professor Karaganov? What makes you smile in the morning? What gives you hope for the future, for your kids, for your... Absolutely. For your
The world is moving in the right direction. I mean, this multicultural, different political systems. I mean, the new civilizations are emerging. Re-emerging. I mean, the world is moving in the right direction. We should avoid this slide into something into a terrible war during the next 15 to 20 years, when everything will be changing. For that, fortunately, unfortunately, we have to reintroduce the nuclear fuse into the system, which, for all kind of reasons, mostly because of strategic pragmatism, people forgot about war, especially in Europe, stopped to work. If we reintroduce nuclear fuse, hopefully without using nuclear weapons, I think we will live through this period, and my grandchildren and their grandchildren will be living in a fantastic world. I'm also always comparing this world to Moscow or St. Petersburg or Novosibirsk and culinary scene. Cuisine, excellent cuisines from all countries. Or, by the way, I mean, I haven't been to Geneva a lot, but in Geneva there also a lot of great restaurants from all over the world. That should be on the political, cultural, and all other levels.
And I can assure you, even in Zurich, we have some very decent restaurants. Professor Karaganov, many thanks for this conversation. Meine Damen und Herren, ganz herzlichen Dank für die Aufmerksamkeit. Das war sehr interessant hier. Da haben wir jetzt also die Perspektive einer russischen geopolitischen Kapazität gehört. Ich danke Ihnen, dass Sie dabei gewesen sind. Und ich danke auch Professor Karaganov, dass er sich hier die Zeit genommen hat. Wir melden uns zurück. Wir wünschen Ihnen einen interessanten Tag. Bleiben Sie dran und ich halte Sie natürlich auf dem Laufenden, was da der russische Präsident Wladimir Putin an der Waldeck-Konferenz in Outlines gesagt hat, wobei man darf das ja nicht zitieren. Es sind Chatham House Rules, man redet vertraulich, aber den allgemeinen Eindruck kann man ja dann wiedergeben. Alles Gute, bis bald, bleiben Sie zuversichtlich und wir melden uns zurück.